Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show. Garrett Lell and Matt Dahl. Matt, thanks for joining me again, dude. How you been?
How's it going? Doing good, doing good.
Good, man. I don't know where you want to start, man. We could talk about the market has kind of slowed down a little bit, like we talked about. I know you had said it had kind of ran maybe just a little bit on the hot side. It has slowed just a little bit. Hasn't really pulled back, but it's at least kind of ran sideways for a little bit. CPI report came in just a touch on the hot side. And as you kind of thought it would, the bond market had a little bit of a miniature meltdown. Where do you want to start, man?
Well, yeah. I mean, CPI came in. It came in at 0.4 on a consensus of 0.3 as far as core month over month, right? And here's the thing. It came in a very cold 0.4. It came in at 0.36 if you go out to the two digits. The bond market effectively went from 409 all the way up to right at 429 and change, right about 430. So it did have a bit of a fit. It didn't go through our line in the sand, didn't get up to the 434, 435, 436 range, which to me seems like I think the equity markets would have a real tough time digesting, you know what I mean? Simply because that would sort of give the green light for yields to go ahead, and that would be the bond market not believing in the inflationary story, or I'm sorry, the disinflation story, right? The long-term disinflationary story. That's the bond market saying, hey, inflation's not whipped yet, okay? And if the bond market typically runs ahead of the Fed, so if the Fed sees the bond market's doing its work for it, right, they might be less apt to want to cut rates. See what I'm saying? So that could actually take several rate cuts off the table. In fact, if you look at end of last year, we had there was 6.8 rate cuts priced in for 2024. This is December of 2023. We had about call it 6.8 rate cuts was the average number priced in for 2024. That number is now down to 3.3. Okay, so we're still holding to our 3 to 4, actually 4. We thought there would be 4 rate cuts this year. And we're holding that. We still believe we're going to finish this year. Our kind of our base case S&P is 5350, but sort of our bull case is 5550. You know, as far as the S&P is concerned, because we still believe that even though we had a hot month, okay, even if you take that month and you annualize it out, the 10-year is still ahead of the 2-year, which is. More closely related to your inflationary numbers in the near term, right? The 2-year sitting at 460, right? Or it was sitting at 460. So, I mean, on a 0.35 annualized basis, you're looking at what? That's 4.2% annualized out. And we had a hot month. We had a hot January. We had a hot February. But we're seeing, and you got to give credit to the guys at Fundstrat for this. They had a great webinar with Tom Lee, with Jens Nordvig this week. And they really delved into what you and I talked about several shows ago, which is the early part of the year inflationary cycle, how it's kind of clustered in the earlier part of the year. And we hadn't really read anything about it, but we see companies doing a lot of price increases at the beginning of the year. Typically, they'll wait. They'll see their margins get sort of eaten up as the year goes on, right? Toward the end of the year, they're like, well, we're going to put a price increase very first of the year. Maybe they'll do it in February, and we'll see sort of those pricing increases clustered in those first 2 or 3 months. So the guys at Fundstrat did a really good job where they took the pre-pandemic inflationary level and they zeroed it out. That made that effectively the par, if that makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. Measured sort of the deviation 2021, 2022, 2023, and into 2024. And you can see just the massive spikes in 2021 and 2022, right? And you can, but what you see is it's done month by month, and you can actually look at how each successive year goes on, each year is lower than the previous year, but all of the years, they seem to be, as far as the United States is concerned, we seem to see higher inflation in the first parts of the year than in the middle to the back parts of the year. So we think there might be a little bit of sort of these annual resets and the lingering effect from those annual resets take that we just saw, and I think the bond market's aware of it. The bond market's, you know, they're smart. We might see a little bit of it in the April, you know, when in April for the March, but we think it will be cooled off a little bit. The biggest number we had on the headline, which was 0.6, that was basically gasoline, right? That was basically gasoline. So, but we're starting to see some of the super core stuff like wages, right? Wages are been a big problem. And there's a really neat graph that shows the quit rate. The quit rate is the percentage of people quitting their jobs and finding another job.
Okay.
So the quit rate and the employment cost index, there's almost a perfect correlation, okay? Because you leave your job to go to another job to make more money. As the quit rate goes up, the ECI goes up. Well, they've both come down to pre-pandemic levels, right? So we think there's a lot of structural inflationary horsepower has kind of started to really level off and has normalized now. So we think we'll get back to those 0.1, 0.2 month over months pretty quick. But I gotta say, even in the face of two hot CPIs in a row, okay, and a hot jobs number came out at 275, okay, on a 200,000 consensus for non-farm payrolls, the equity market's been resilient.
2 weeks ago on the show, you said that CPI we were expecting on March 12th around 0.3. You said if it got much higher at all, I mean, even 0.35, you thought the bond market was going to kind of lose it a little bit. We got 0.4. The 10-year did move from 409 up to 430, but it held that 435. So I'm looking back, that 435 number on the 10-year is back from August of last year. Mm-hmm. From August to now on that technical level, the S&P is up significantly. It's at 5,100, up from 43 and change. So, I mean, we've had a huge move up in the equity market since the last time we were at, or not the last time, but since that 435 level was first set in the bond market. So what do you make of that other than just, hey, that's just the resiliency of this market?
So where did the bond market go from August to September? It went up. The yields went up.
Right. Yields went up. Right.
Where did the equity markets go from August to September? The other way.
Right.
Where did the bond market go from October 1 to December 31? We round tripped it. Remember, we round tripped mm-hmm. Q3 and Q4. We went from 457 to 388. Okay. So now we're from 388 up to 435. But we've seen a lot of strong earnings. There's frankly 6 months is almost a lifetime in the market, almost like, you know, almost like politics, right? So mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of change in the equity markets. We've seen a big adoption of the AI narrative. We've seen a big adoption of very strong guidance from these companies, like obviously NVIDIA. And we've seen really great earnings, okay? In fact, I think we posted $222 a share, what we thought the S&P would make this year. The number's not quite in, but I think we're within a buck, okay? We're right. within a buck of that. So earnings were strong. I mean, there was a lot of people, you know, calling for, like we talked about many shows ago, there was people calling for $185 a share. Like, what are you watching? Right.
Yeah.
We're calling for $247.50 this year, $272, $273 in 2025. So the market is well aware that this economy is growing and earnings are strong. And we're seeing that in the equal weight S&P in the value line. There's a great broadening of this rally, right? Although the market might be pulling back a little bit, that's your big cap weights, your NVIDIA's, your Microsoft's, your Amazon's. Those guys are starting to cool off a little bit. But we've seen the equal weight hit new all-time highs. The EQAL, which is the equal weight plus a bunch of mid-caps and some small caps in there, that's almost all-time highs. It's rallied significantly this year. It's done very well in the last month. We're seeing financials participate. We're seeing industrials participate. We're seeing materials participate. Things that we did not see last year. Last year was 100% tech. We're seeing healthcare come back. We're actually seeing the biotechs do well this year. So we're seeing a nice broadening of the market. And this is super healthy. This is great. And so, you know, this is what you want to see. This is a sustainable market. That's why we're so bullish for 2024, 2025. You know, obviously no one has a crystal ball at all, but you know, visibility into that much further, I think is more of a fool's errand than what we've already done. So, you know, this is good demand in the market. This is a strong economy, and we're seeing that all across the board.
from COVID, and you just touched on it a minute ago with the seasonality of inflation and adjusting for the COVID numbers, but 2020, we just like turned the money printer on like nothing we've ever seen before. And everybody understands eventually you got to pay the piper on that. Eventually that's going to come in with inflation, and we're going to see interest rates follow that. 2022 really was the year that we saw the bond market finally react to what had been a very, very long-term, you know, something that everybody has seen coming for a long time. Has the market fully digested all of that money that was pumped into the system in 2020? I mean, I know that printing a lot of money is not a new concept, right? We've been doing that for decades, but 2020 was a whole new level. Do you think we fully digested that entire meal of cash that was dumped into our laps in 2020, or is there still some work that could be done on that?
I mean, there could be some lingering effects, especially as far as the QT is concerned with the quantitative tightening. A lot of that is poised to slow down in the back half of this year. So I think a lot of that has been burned off. You know, as far as cash available, we looked at 1 year ago, right at the Silicon Valley Bank crisis, right? We had $4.8 trillion sitting on the sidelines, right? Which was a lot, right? That's up to $6 trillion now. When we looked at bank outflows, so I think, well, people are taking the money out of their savings accounts and they're putting into the money market because they're getting 5%, 5.25% on Vanguard money markets or BlackRock money markets, right? Well, it's not true. Only about $230 billion of it comes from the banks. The rest of it is dry powder, people going on the sidelines. Okay. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of potential energy sitting on the side of the market that obviously came out of the market, right? So we're not seeing a lot of new fresh inflows from outside sources into the market. So there's a, you know what I mean? If we had inflows in the last year of $1 trillion, that's a different story. And it's not, it's $234 billion. And that's a fairly average number year over year. That's not high, that's not low, it's pretty normal. So that lets me know, we look at consumer credit, it's fine. It's not overly stretched, but it's not overly great. In fact, just last week was the first, they do a monthly average credit score, was the first time in 10 years that the average credit score ticked down, went from 718 to 717. Okay. Wow. So you're starting to see people use credit a little bit more. So that tells me that the free cash for the most part is gone. Okay. And I would think that the tip of the spear cash, the cash you really don't need, right, is like, okay, I got a bunch of free money from the government. I bought all the crap that I need. You know, I've paid all my bills. I'm going to put some, and the stock market's going well, I'm going to put that into the market.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. And in 2022, they all took it back out, clearly. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's, from everything I can gather, there's a lot of money on the sidelines, don't get me wrong. And maybe some of that may be the residual money left over that they made in the market and they brought back and now it's sitting in cash, which is fine. But as far as fresh new money that's sitting somewhere outside of the market that's going to come in from the printing press of 2020 and 2021 and I guess some of 2022, I think that's got to be close to 95-ish or more percent exhausted.
Okay. So politics wise, did Super Tuesday do anything to the markets? I mean, is that something that was it with just exactly what we expected and nothing really to see here?
I'm going to quote an old Simpsons episode. Unless you were living in Mars in a cave with your eyes closed and your fingers in your ears for the last 8 months or year and a half, exactly what we all thought was going to happen happened. Okay. You looked at the polling data, the market, I don't really care, right? We don't care. We just look at the data. Trust your data, right? Trust your data, trust your data, trust your data. So trust your data. That was the data that we had. So we're pricing that in. And the bond market's done, I think, a heck of a job pricing that in, because I think there's a part of that there's a part of the bond market that is pricing in a Trump victory. Okay, which is why the yields have been a little stickier based on what happened in 2016, based on obviously he's very pro-business and all those other things. I can't imagine anyone would think a Trump win is a negative for the equity markets. Whether you like them or you don't, it doesn't matter.
So do you think that that's
positive for the equity markets based on his what he'll do for corporate tax cuts, all those other things, but it'll bring earnings down to the it will grow earnings at the bottom line, right? Which is
good. Is that part of the explanation? Do you think, sorry to cut you off there, but do you think that's part of the explanation for why bond yields are still at 435 or still holding that 435, but equities are at, you know, still right there at the highs?
I think there's a small part of it. I think that's the resiliency. Obviously, I think is the halo effect from the NVIDIA, from the general AI. Okay. I think that's the biggest part of it. And I think at 435-ish, call it a few basis points either way, that there's not enough of a halo for the AI to continue the market heading up if yields really pop. But I don't think yields will get there. I think yields will likely roll over. But the reason yields, I think a small, and I don't know what the number is. Maybe it's 25, 30 basis points. Okay. But maybe the reason the yields aren't sitting at 390 today or 375 is because of that, because of it might be pricing something like this, and it might be pricing in, because remember, the market looks 9-12 months out. Well, 9-12 months out is the election and a Trump victory, right? Potential Trump victory. And now we're going to have more economic expansion with the Trump presidency. It could be, you know, and that's what the bond market could be pricing in right now. So, you know, the inflationary data will have a far larger effect on yields. And then of course, a potential Trump victory or loss, don't get me wrong, but there's probably a small portion there's specifically to the 2 year, I would think the two, 3-4 year yields that are subject to a potential Trump victory. Because I'm telling you, there was a lot of pain in the bond market late 2016, early 2017. And they remember it very well. I should do it.
Just say, like right now, I mean, obviously, I don't think it's, and again, I can't reiterate enough, I could care less. I mean, we're not here to talk politics in terms of who we want to win, but we had talked about it on the show one time. There's probably not an informed human being on the planet who thinks that Trump is necessary, is going to be bad for the stock market. He's one of the most pro-business human beings alive. So we get that part. But is Trump a headwind or a tailwind for the bond market? Because that can go either way, right? An expanding economy can be good for the bond market in some areas, and it can be bad for it in others. But at this point, does the 10-year yield go up or down on a Trump win?
Goes down. The 10-year yield likely would go up.
Bonds go down, yields go up if he wins.
The bond price would go down, the yield would likely go up, okay, if he actually won. Because I think there would be an initial spike in yields if Trump was elected. Now, what happens subsequent to that, a year, 18 months, 24 months out, would largely be dependent on what's happening in the economy and how his presidency engaged the economy and how it grew it or didn't grow it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and you've also got sort of a tug of war that goes on. I mean, you know, equities are usually pretty straightforward. You know, I mean, equities are sort of the, you know, back to the good girlfriend, bad girlfriend. We got to get that into about every show. We might even rename it that at some point. But, right. You know, the equity market for the most part is going to be a brunette. You kind of know what you're getting there. The bond market can be a little bit of a redhead sometimes. I mean, what you think you're going to get is not always going to be what you get, because you've got this tug of war between credit and monetary policy. So monetary policy can run hand in hand with credit policy or credit tightening and credit loosening, but it also can go the other way around. Like you said, when those yields go up, now the banks want to lend, but then sometimes they don't. They still know why those yields are going up and what's going on there.
The bond market can absolutely be a redhead. That's great. I don't think I've ever dated a redhead. I mean, I don't have any scars from it. So probably,
have not. I can say I've never dated a redhead.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have either. I'm lucky my wife is a lovely brunette, you know? So.
And we've already said they are very predictable. We like brunette. That good, solid brunettes. That's what we like.
I don't know that I would call her predictable. She's not predictable.
She doesn't watch the show, does she?
God, I hope not. So if you're listening to the show, honey, you're beautiful and predictable, I meant to say. You're
boring anyway.
You're a goblin alien, and she's beautiful. What's going on? So yeah, the bond market can absolutely be a redhead. How many people in 2021 went into 2022 thinking, hey, I'm gonna be safe. I'm gonna go to the bond market. I'm gonna live in the bond market. I'm gonna go investment grade corporate. I'm just gonna go into the AG, which is the aggregate bond index. It's all the bonds in the world, you know, in one spot. Investment grade corporate index was down 17.5-18% in 2022. This is your safety stuff. This is your we're not talking high yield. We're talking investment grade corporates, Amazons, Walmarts, Home Depots, Boeings. Their credit was down 17-18%. The aggregate bond index, which includes your govies, your treasuries, all high, you know, all investment grade corporates, short term, long term, all maturities, all durations, all credit qualities, that was down almost 15% 2022. So yeah, that bond market can, you know, you think you're going to save, and that's what we try to tell clients, like, listen, you know, the old adage of I want to be safe, I want to be all in bonds, it's not really safe any. It's not safe because it's you're losing purchasing, you're taking purchasing power risk too, because your money's not growing like it should be. So you're not going to have that purchasing power 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, which is a different kind of risk, right? Moreover, the bond market can get pretty wild too, like it did, especially when there's inflationary problems. And it can, and it, you know, we've seen a lot of new clients come in here. They were in bonds and they lost, you know, 10, 15, 20% in bonds in 2022. Well, those, they haven't nearly recovered. I mean, you look at, I want to say the ag was up, what, 5% last year from the 15 it was down in 2022, and it's down 1.6% this year. So you lost that all in 2022 and you haven't recovered. But if you're in the S&P, yeah, you were down 20% in 2022, but it was up 25 in 2023, and at least it's up 6% this year. So you've recovered now. So the bond market is safe, is those days are gone. You have to have equity. If you're not having it, you're taking risk on a risk adjusted basis, right? You're like, you're getting no return or negative return for, and you're getting some volatility, a lot of volatility in the bond market these days. So, I'm curious to see the bond market has, I think, done a masterful job of not going too far with these recent inflationary numbers, because let me just say, if bonds were traded on Robinhood, right, by the Reddit idiot crowd, okay, like stock, like games, like stocks are,
right,
then you would be sitting at 9% right now. You know what I mean? But the bond market is a very sober group of people, right? They look things in very long duration. It's not the equity markets. It's not the front stage where the main band plays. It's the side stage, right? But it's a much, how can I say this? It's a actually a better band, right? They're good, right? So I think the bond market could throw a hissy fit if there's another high inflation number well above consensus. Consensus hasn't posted yet. My guess is consensus for March will probably come in the 0.25. It might show up at 0.3, just to be on a lot of the analysts will probably put in 0.3 just to be on the safe side. Okay. My guess it'll probably come in pretty close or slightly cooler based on, although we have lingering effects of the residual seasonality from the year over year price increases, most of that will have been burned off by then. So, if we have consensus of 0.2 and it comes in at 0.44, I think you're going to see the 10-year and the two-year explode over 5%. And that would probably cause a minimum of a 7% pullback on the equity side, if depending on where it is then, right?
Quick question here, and I don't know if you, I mean, it's not really, I guess, that important of a question. I'm just really curious your opinion. So, I mean, if you take a step back and look very big picture for a second, right? I mean, the bond market has just finished a 40-year tear, basically bull run in the bond market, and then we've seen a little bit of a turn, or a little bit of a step back in it over the last couple of years. I know you're bullish on equities, at least, you know, intermediate term, which I would say is, you know, 1 to 2 year range. I know you're pretty bullish on equities. Do you have an opinion on the longer term, other than just the technical levels we've talked about before and what it means to equities? Do you have an opinion on the bond market longer term?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it will normalize. You know, here's what people don't understand is it had a 40-year pull down from almost 20%. I mean,
true.
The 10-year treasury was sitting at nearly 20% in 19, whatever, 79.
81. I just looked at it. It's 81, yeah.
it was nuts. And it bled off slowly over time. I mean, I remember when I bought my first house in the year, I think it was year 2000, my interest rate was 7.25%. Now that, to my parents, was great, right? They were buying homes at 12%, things like that.
Yeah. Now so, it's laughable, yeah.
Right. And what happened is you had a Federal Reserve in the 70s that didn't fight inflation properly until Volcker came in and killed inflation. And he spiked interest rates. He knew what he was doing and he killed inflation. And then slowly interest rates came down, like they stepped down, and then they started to bleed off over a longer, much longer period of time. But it wasn't a straight line either. I mean, it had fits and starts. It really did. And, you know, what happened, then we had sort of the 2000s, where interest rates kind of lived in the 6% range, 6 to 7% range for a longer term. Then we had effectively the Great Depression 2.0. Okay. And that brought interest rates down to just zero.
For many years. Yeah. The opposite side of the late 70s, early 80s, right. Like just so, the extreme on the other side.
Right. So we spent the last 15 years or so kind of creeping back up into a more normalized space. So 40 years down, 15 years, or not 40 years down, but effectively actually 2000. So call it 28 years down. Okay. And 27 years down and about 13 years up, right? 13 years from zero. I mean, it's been the last 10 years, it's been basically zero. Okay. It hasn't really done anything since 2009, 2010. With the exception of when Jerome Powell became the Fed chairman and he made the autopilot and he was raising rates in 2018. Yeah, but he stopped doing that and started cutting back again. So I think we're a lot smarter now than we were then. I think the Federal Reserve is a lot smarter now than we were then. They have a lot more data now than they've had then. They have a lot more people, PhDs, than they had back then. And they understand the very complex nuance of interest rates and how to tighten monetary policy and loosen monetary policy than they did. So I think what they're trying to get to is instead of it being a house on fire or not, and we talked about this a couple of shows ago, why do we have to wait till the economy is in free fall before we're cutting rates? And that's going to point to what's coming up, right? What's coming up? The Fed meeting next week, okay?
Right.
Press conference next week. And I want, and I'm telling you, we're all going to be sitting on the edge of our seat, listening for how he communicates these most recent inflationary numbers as it relates to policy going forward. Is he going to say, you know, hey, we were thinking about having active discussions about cutting rates at the following meeting. Those have been taken off the table because inflation is still too high. If he says that, again, the bond market could turn into a redhead and go nuts, and equity markets could, you know, is the little sister going, what are we doing?
Redhead on tequila. Yeah, redhead on tequila on St. Patty's Day.
Exactly. So, it could be a good time. It could be a real good time. You know what I mean? So, it'd be fun to watch. So, we're really interested to see how he communicates and how the bond market reacts to that communication. All right.
Yeah.
And that's what's really important. And I think if my guess is he's going to lean dove. He's going to lean dove because these feds, they're a very smart group of people. They know what they're doing. Okay. They know there's seasonality as it relates to inflation And then there's residual, you know, lingering effects and residual seasonality that happens after January to February, maybe even into March. Okay. They're aware of all of these things. You're not going to tell them anything new. So I think there was probably going to be some typical volatility that we get right at the, around the press conference, the day after the press conference. But if there's nothing materially meaningful or something that the markets haven't priced in either way, I think it'll just be a 1 or 2 day whip around. That'll be about it. I think we'll probably finish this quarter probably within a percent of where we are now. And then as we get into April, which is usually a really good month, okay, maybe into early April, there could be some, I think we might get a pullback into the spring, you know, and again, it could be cause for any reason. I think the market is at, there's nothing wrong with the market. There's earnings are good. Things are fine. Economy strong. Demand is great. All these things. But the market, I think, would welcome some catalyst that would pull it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of what it feels like to me. But don't get me wrong. The market, this market could, as easy, we're sitting at what, 5120 right now? Okay, 5120. Mm-hmm. Okay. This market could, as easy as it could go to 4,800, or well, let's call it 5,000, right? Call it maybe 2-3%. It could go to 5,250, 5,300 before it goes back down to 4,800. I mean, that's how strong this market is. And here's the thing. We are 1 month away from earnings season starting over.
Yeah.
If earnings are good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here we go again. So again, we're still not, we're not adding new money at these levels. We're not adding any new money, but we're not calling a top either. And we're not saying sell, nothing like that. We're not really calling a top, but we think there could be some consolidation that happens between now and the end of Q2 that'll provide a little bit of opportunity. We'll take it there.
Well, and I know we got to run here, but a couple of shows ago, we talked about NVIDIA and how tops in the market can come when the market doesn't go up on good news. That can be a bad sign. I mean, NVIDIA is up another 6-7% even since we talked then. I mean, it just continues to tear. So as you look into the next earnings cycle, I mean, part of you wants to say, man, the bar is probably set really, really high going into next quarter. Sometimes that's not the case. I mean, if you got this strong of a market, I mean, there's still some room for it to go up on good news possibly.
Yeah, what I was looking for was how was the market was going to react to the non-farm payroll last Friday. We had 275,000 jobs created in February on a 200,000 consensus. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good news, right? That's good news. Okay.
Yes.
The market didn't go down.
Yeah.
But didn't go, the bond market didn't freak out and the equities didn't go down.
Right.
So that lets me know that, you know, we're really not at a market top. I think we might go sideways, consolidate 5-7% on the downside. That would be good. I mean, there's no, I don't see some structural catalyst is going to bring the market down 15-20% or anything like that.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people calling for it, but I just don't see I don't see that in the recipe.
Calling for that sells ads and clicks and stuff too. A lot of times people who are calling for that are just trying to get attention, get more attention.
A lot of it is the mean reversion.
Yeah.
Just the reversion to mean argument. That's what it is. Yeah. Well, it went up this much. It has to come all the way back down. No, it doesn't. Right. It's the market has provided strong earnings, provided great guidance. It's done a good, you know, we're nowhere near. If you look at the NASDAQ, we're sitting at 26 times earnings. Okay.
Right.
I mean, at the heights of 2021, we were at 30. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's this back narrative out there that you might hear now and again, that this is the dot-com bubble and all these other things, right? All over again. The NASDAQ was at 75 times earnings then. Okay. It's living in a very average. The NASDAQ averages 25, 26 times earnings anyways. Mm-hmm. So the NASDAQ is actually sitting in an average multiple. The S&P is a little extended because the S&P is kind of growing into the NASDAQ because it holds all the tech companies,
right?
It holds them. So its multiple is organically just going to expand. into
multiple. Yeah, as we talked about on the last show, the bigger tech is, the bigger percentage of the S&P tech becomes, and the more it becomes, you're right, it grows in. That's a great way of saying that. I love the way you said that.
Yeah,
the S&P grows into the NASDAQ.
The S&P multiple is expanding closer to the NASDAQ index because those companies are becoming such a large part of the S&P 500. It can't help but do it. It doesn't mean the S&P is overpriced. The NASDAQ is actually averagely priced, right? It's just the S&P is becoming more closely related to that. So I think the 5-year 18.7 average of the S&P 500, when we look at it 5 years from now, is probably going to be closer to 20.
Yeah.
And that will just be the healthy number that we live with. I mean, if you go back 10 years, it's 17. But you can see the tech companies are just moving, they're just kind of moving everything up.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, dude. Appreciate it, man. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
See you in a couple weeks. We have to do our disclosures.
Everything we say on the show is nothing we say actually on the show is intended to be investment advice or financial advice of any kind, because neither Matt nor I or anything that we're associated with don't know anything about your situation. So it's for entertainment and educational purposes only. Did I get it all?
If you're looking for direction, please feel free to reach out to ARPG.
That a boy. Make sure we get that in there the most. And I'll make sure we've got all the contact information is on the end screen. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see his phone number. You'll see websites. You got all that stuff on there. And it'll be in the description if you're listening to it on Apple Tunes or Apple Music or Spotify or any of those fine distribution channels.
All right, my friend. You have a great
day. Thank you, Matt.
Bye.
See you, bud.